Good afternoon. Welcome to this news conference sponsored by the American Orthotic and Prosthetic Association. You will be hearing from three speakers today, and before we introduce them as a group and then individually, I want to invite the operator on the line to explain how the Q&A period will work today.
During the question and answer session, you may ask a question by pressing star, then one on your touchtone phone. If you would like to remove yourself from the queue, you may press star, then two. Again, it is star one to ask a question.
And we will have the operator back on the line at the start of the Q&A period to repeat those instructions about how members of the news media can pose questions. As I mentioned, you will be hearing from three speakers today: Charles Dankmeyer, President of the American Orthotic and Prosthetic Association; study co-author Alan Dobson, President of Dobson Davanzo; and Mary Palmer, Business Manager at Nelson Prosthetic and Orthotic Laboratory, a Buffalo, New York firm that has been forced to lay off employees in the wake of dozens of audits. Let's go ahead and begin with our first speaker.
Good afternoon. Welcome to this news event that is sponsored by the American Orthotic and Prosthetic Association. You'll hear us referred to as AOPA throughout this presentation. We're here today to warn you about a worsening crisis for small healthcare provider firms, a Medicare audit mess that is surging at the rate of 15,000 appeals a week. The good news is that Medicare could save The good news is that Medicare could avoid rapidly mounting interest payments, saving over $12 million a year in the next decade. You'll hear more about that shortly from experts at the research firm Dobson Davanzo & Associates, who conducted the analysis that AOPA is releasing today. What I can tell you on behalf of AOPA is that more than 100 orthotic and prosthetic providers already have shut down due to delays in the Medicare appeals process, and hundreds more are at risk of suffering the same fate. There's no end in sight to this monster backlog, which now has as many as 1.5 million appeals waiting to be heard. The appeals, which by law are supposed to be handled in 90 days, can drag out for 3 years or longer. Let me tell you about what a typical orthotic and prosthetic practice looks like. There will be two or three clinicians who provide patient care, two or three technicians who do fabrication, three or four office staff, and one or two general helpers. That's 8 to 12 employees. That's pretty typical. The orthoses and prostheses they provide are low in number, but high in the value of the claim. When a claim is retracted by the recovery audit contractors, we call that the RAC audit, R-A-C, that O&P practice has lost all of the expenses it has already incurred to provide that prosthesis with that patient with a prosthesis or orthosis. With a 3-year wait to have an appeal heard, that loss of revenue becomes unsustainable to these practices. We're a collection of small practices. The truth is, there's a real and growing mess out today at Medicare when it comes to recovery audit contractor appeals. They are stacking up in the system with no relief in sight. Legitimate Medicare audits are a necessary part to protect federal monies and fight fraud and abuse. However, the current RAC system has flaws, starting with the fact that RAC auditors are incentivized to maximize their assertions of provider errors in order to collect a bounty of up to 13% for every dollar called back. The result has been an out-of-control surge in audits, a worsening situation for small healthcare providers, including orthotic and prosthetic providers, that are unable to provide and survive the cash flow nightmares in this hostile environment, as they wait for years for their day in court, where the odds are good, they'll win. But sometimes it's too late to keep their business afloat. This is a crisis that should have never happened. We need to fix it in a way that saves the federal government money on needless interest payments and also allows small health care providers to avoid being crushed by the system. I thank you for your time, and I look forward to taking your questions during the Q&A period.
And again, that was Charles Dankmeyer, President of the American Orthotic and Prosthetic Association. This takes us to our second speaker making brief opening remarks, Alan Dobson.
Hello, and good afternoon and good morning, wherever you are in the country. As we've just heard, the current Medicare audit system is broken. 30-month delays if the system is working, and worse yet, it often doesn't work at all, where people are put in indefinite hiatus before they can have access to independent appeals. Providers currently have to submit payments to CMS for RAC audits before filing an appeal with an administrative law judge. If the provider receives a favorable disposition, CMS repays that provider plus interest for the amount of time that CMS holds their money. This costs CMS money, and it's not very effective at all. Due to the significant increase in appeals, they've risen 545% between 2011 and 2013. Backlog for appeals is estimated to be at least 28 months to 30 months to get a docket assigned. So folks are waiting 30 months roughly before they can even get on a docket, and in all that time, they've lost their money. Their money isn't under their possession, so that's a great financial hit on the providers. Plus, there's an additional 6 month post-assignment. As the backlog increases, so does CMS's interest payments. Since the backlog is so significant, providers are no longer having their appeals recognized. They are waiting even longer to get in the process. That is to say, they're set into hiatus again, and it's indeterminate. They don't know when they'll be able to appeal. A big challenge of our study was to understand how many appeals are out there, as no one technically knows, because so many people they stopped tracking since July 2013, and so many people have been said, wait, take your turn, and we don't know how many people are in the queue. What we do know is about 15,000 per week, units per week, are entering into the queue, a great number mounting rapidly over time. The proposed policy that AOPAS wants to put in place would allow providers to submit payment to CMS after the ALJ determination as opposed to before. If this would be the case, then CMS would eliminate the need for paying interest on favorable appeals, which are over half. Half the appeals are favorable in terms of AOPA. Our analysis concentrates on AOPA services, but is extended to all Part B services. That would be Medicare physician claims by and large. RAC claims for O&P services are about 10.5% of all Part B RAC claims, again, physician-type claims and durable medical equipment claims, but represent more than one-half of all the claim payment amounts. So the AOPA folks are at a greater risk than a typical provider to have their monies withheld. We have estimated that Medicare could save about $7.5 million over 10 years for O&P services and about $12.4 million over 10 for Part B services in total. Therefore, and this is really important, 20 to 30% of CMS remaining recruitment for improper Medicare payments is taken in interest payments. For every $10 Medicare collects, they're paying 20 to 30% in interest, which makes no sense at all. And that's primarily a result of the fact that the system is broken and there's such lengthy time lags in place. We did not count many kinds of services that are called Part A or the hospital services, which would make our numbers much larger. We only calculated the costs for AOPA and for the Part B. So in summary, the Dobson-DeVanzo study found that the appeal system at the ALJ level is totally broken. As a result, there are two main consequences. First, the government currently pays out almost one-third of its total recoup funds for improper Medicare payments in the form of interest payments to successful provider appeals. Hugely, hugely inefficient system. The delay in the review process, about 30 months, significantly increases the amount of these interest payments. Second, providers have their money withheld by the government for the duration of the review, which leads to financial uncertainty, which we've just heard about. The proposed policy could mitigate the cost to the government and reduce the financial uncertainty faced by providers. Thank you.
And again, that was study co-author Alan Dobson, president of Dobson-DeVanzo. This takes us to our third and final speaker making brief opening remarks, Mary Palmer.
Good afternoon. My name is Mary Palmer. I am the business manager at Nelson Prosthetic and Orthotic Laboratory in Buffalo, New York. The company I work for has been in business for over 30 years. We are a well-respected firm, and we take great pride in the work we do for our patients, who definitely need our services. My employer has always been proud of the fact that he had never had to lay anyone off. But all that changed when the federal government decided to turn us into its banker under the audit appeal process. Now we give them our money and then wait years for them to give it back. Before this started, Nelson Prosthetics had 14 full-time employees. Since then, we've had to let go of 2 employees because of the unbearable strain and uncertainty associated with these audits. Nelson Prosthetics now has tremendous difficulty planning, knowing that these audits can hit at any time and that the appeals can last indefinitely. Within the first month of the new RAC program, in January of 2012, Nelson Prosthetics was hit with 28 audits. It was a crisis for our company. We were able to battle these down to 6 official audits, but it took us several months of our time to get it there. 4 of these audits are now in appeal and have been since 2012, which means Nelson Prosthetics had to pay out the money up front. The total value of these outstanding appeals is $44,000, including a single service of $23,000 for a prosthetic leg. That may not sound like a lot in Washington, but it's a heavy burden for a small business like us to bear. I'm hoping that the story of our company in Buffalo will cause people to realize that if the federal government is going to give people an incentive to report errors and then reward them for doing so and force us to pay up front for something that we will end up winning in appeals years from now, then we are talking about a system that is broken. We'd like to see that broken system fixed before it forces hundreds or even thousands of additional small healthcare businesses to shut their doors. Everybody wants accountability, but there's a difference between accountability and persecution. Thank you for your attention to my comments, and I look forward to taking your questions.
And again, that was Mary Palmer, business manager at Nelson Prosthetic and Orthotic Laboratory, a Buffalo, New York firm that has been forced to lay off employees, as you heard, in the wake of dozens of audits. This takes us to the Q&A portion of the call, and as we begin this, I want to invite the operator back on the line once more to explain again how the Q&A period will work.
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then 1 on your touch-tone phone. If you decide to withdraw your question, please press star, then 2 to remove yourself from the list. Please limit yourself to 1 question and a single follow-up. If you need to ask an additional question, please know that you may press star 1 to rejoin the queue.
Okay, great. Thanks, Maureen. And while we are waiting on our first question, I want to emphasize that the Q&A period is for media only. You can find the new report that's being released on the web as well as a copy of the related news release at www.aopanet.org. Again, that is www.aopanet.org. I also want to stress that we will be joined by 3 additional experts during the Q&A period today. Study co-author Audrey L. Gamil, a senior manager at Dobson Davanzo, Tom Feiss, the executive director of AOPA, and Joe McTernan, director of coding and reimbursement services at AOPA. After this news event is over, you can contact Will Harwood at 703-276-3255 to be connected with any of the speakers that you have heard from today. Operator, with that, let's go ahead and move to our first question.
Our first question is from Lori Watanabe, Mobility Management Magazine. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for the opportunity, first of all, and I was wondering if you had a percentage of appeals that were won eventually.
Audrey, go ahead.
Sure. Among the O&P industry, they have a success rate of being favorable or partially favorable of 51%, and in the Part B services overall, it is a lower percent. The success rate is 43.9%. And that includes the O&P services within the Part B services as well.
Okay, perfect. May I ask a follow-up?
Yes, absolutely.
May I ask how you've seen layoffs that we've heard described, for instance, how this entire broken system impacts consumers who, for instance, may be losing relationships with O&P professionals that they've had for a long time?
I can jump in with that a little bit. This is Charles Dankmeyer. And what has happened, as Mary explained, when a practice can no longer sustain itself, it needs to go ahead and to lay off employees. As that practice gets smaller, those patients who have a long-term relationship with that particular provider may lose that relationship because that person is no longer available. And that's really very tragic. If you're familiar with those folks who wear prostheses and orthoses, they develop lifelong relationships with their practitioners, and it's very, very, very upsetting to go ahead and lose your clinician.
Thank you.
I would also like to add, this is Mary Palmer from Nelson Prosthetics, that it has affected patient care greatly, not only because we have less employees to provide the services, but because the patients are waiting a lot longer for a service that, you know, if they come to us and need that service, they need that service. It's how they function in life, and it's taking us longer to provide the service, and the uncertainty of when we're going to get paid and is also bearing on our services for that patient.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, great. And operator, let's go ahead and move to our next question.
Our next question is Jim Swift, the Weekly Standard. Please go ahead.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for doing this and for taking my question. I guess it's a two-part question. The first being, how receptive are the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services to making such change? And do they have the statutory authority to make such a change, or would it be required action by Congress? And the second part of this is, you know, I think back to all, you know, our fund individual dealings with the IRS and with interest. Were you to get what you want, which is, you know, to defer payment of potentially improper payments until an administrative law judge, you know, he hears you out and it makes, you know, a disposition, would, if the disposition were not favorable under what you are seeking, would the appellant be required to pay that money back with a similar amount of interest or without interest?
Tom, you
maybe it would be best for me to, this is Tom Feist with AOPA, and maybe I can take at least a stab at that one. The analogy that you make on taxes is an interesting one, because actually, if you have a tax claim, you can go to the tax court with your claim, or you can go to the court of claims with your claim. And this is if you're asserting that the federal government extracted too much money or whatever. In one of those, you have the option of paying the money up front, and similar to this, then waiting and hoping to receive it on the back end. But in the other, you actually don't pay until after the adjudication has occurred. And so there is a parallel. I think it's important to point out that this is not something that CMS is rallying behind to do, although we haven't had explicit opposition to it either. It is something that is going to take a statutory change in order to rejigger the system, and obviously change is always hard. And I guess my final comment would be this: both the problem of the interest, which has grown dramatically, and the problem for the providers of being out of pocket, are really both a result of HHS not meeting the current statutory standard, which says that you are entitled to a final decision by an administrative law judge within 90 days from the date that you file the appeal. If we ever could get back to that and get through the 1.5 million claims that are in the queue, it wouldn't be necessary to delay until after the recoupment date. And we wouldn't have this ballooning interest problem. But in the current circumstance where that law is being fairly blatantly ignored each and every day, it takes the unusual circumstance of coming up with a creative solution to keep people in business and to keep control of the federal interest payments.
Thank you.
Okay, great. And Jim, is there a follow-up question? Okay, great. And while we're waiting on our next question, I want to once again emphasize that you can find the report that has been issued as well as a copy of the related news release on the web at www.aopanet.org. Again, that's www.aopanet.org. And operator, why don't we get a reprompt to make sure that members of the news media on call know how to get in here and answer ask a question.
As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question or a follow-up, you may press star, then 1 on your touch-tone phone. To remove yourself from the queue, you can press star, then 2. Again, it is star 1 to ask a question.
Okay, great. And operator, do we have any questions at this time?
Yes, we do have a question. Michelle Stein, Inside Health Policy. Please go ahead.
Hi. I was wondering if you could explain to me how this would affect the RAC contingency fees, especially in light of the fact that a court just said that CMS could not push back collecting RAC contingency fees as part of the new contracts until after the second level of appeals. So I'm wondering if that would affect at all your proposal here.
Again, this is Tom Feist, and I probably am the best one to tackle this one. I mean, obviously, this is a study that's been going on for a couple of months and a legislative proposal that has been going on for a while as well. And so it was not something that was tailored around the CGI decision in favor of CGI, which, as you say, just I guess within the past 10 days or so, found that CMS was not acting appropriately in delaying payment of the contingency fees. Since this would require, it's not something that we started out thinking about, okay? But since this would require a legislative change, it would not be, I think, the behavior of CMS, but rather it would be to delay the availability of the funds until there was an independent determination. I can't say either how the statutory language might reflect the recent CGI decision, and I certainly can't claim to know what the answer would be, but my best guess is that if the money is not due from the provider until a later time, then you can't have the contractors expecting to be paid before the statute requires the providers to pay.
Okay, so you're basically saying because this would have to go through legislation anyway and would require legislative change, Congress could basically handle this and write this in such a way as to incorporate what's happened and to handle it that way.
I think so. That was not the intent of doing this, to somehow change the rules in response to CGI, but I think they could do that at the same time that they made this fix.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Okay, great. Thanks, Michelle, for that question. And operator, do we have any other questions in the queue at this time?
There are no questions at this time.
Okay, great. Well, I do want to once again emphasize, make sure that everyone here has a copy of the report. It's available once again at www.aopanet.org. Again, that's www.aopanet.org. We will also have a copy of this recorded audio available as of 5 p.m. today. So if you need to go back through and listen to that, we will have that available on that site as well. We have also had a number of questions coming offline about this, about the bounty related to the RAC auditors. I know that was mentioned in the opening statements, but if there's anyone that wants to open up and talk about that kind of incentivized system, I'll turn the floor over. A number of media questions did come in on that.
I can comment a bit about that. This is Charles Dankmeyer, and one of the things that happens with the bounty, if you will, or the commission, however you want to phrase it, is if you have an auditor, or if you are an auditor, and you are looking through claims, and you see a claim that has a $300 value to it, and then next to it you see a claim that has $35,000 value to it, and if indeed your commission or bounty is 10 to 13%, I believe the answer is 13%, then you're going to want to look harder at that $35,000 claim because it's worth $3,500 plus to you compared to $30 for that $300 claim. So it's no wonder that in the case of prosthetics and orthotics, where we have low volumes of claims, but the claim values are quite high, that RAC auditors focus on that. And if you look at the report from Dobson DiVanzo, you will see that orthotists and prosthetists are audited at a much higher rate than others. So that's a part of the problem as far as the incentivizing of the RAC auditors.
Okay, great. And Charles, thanks for that. Thanks for that answer. Maureen, do we have any questions in the queue at this time?
There are no questions at this time.
Okay. Well, I do know that we have many members of the media on call right now, so why don't we get one final reprompt and give reporters one final chance to get in and take advantage of all these great speakers we've got, and then we can move to closing remarks, should anyone have any.
To ask a question, you may press star then one on your touch-tone phone. To remove yourself from the queue, you can press star then two. Again, it is star one to ask a question.
Okay, Maureen, do we have any questions at this time?
There are no questions, sir.
Okay. Well, why don't we go ahead and move back to kind of closing remarks, any thoughts that any of the speakers that you've heard from, including those that came in for the Q&A. I don't know if there's anyone that wants to speak to anything before we close out here, but I'll turn the floor over to the speakers, and if there's anyone that wants to chime in, this is a great time to do it.
This is Al Dobson. I'll just reiterate that the brokenness of this system is kind of atypical and kind of unusual. You've got people waiting 30 months when they're in the system, and you have a whole lot of folks that their monies are at risk, and they don't even know when they're going to be reviewed. They're put in non-queue, kind of wait. We call it waiting to cross the bridge. Highly unusual. You'd think the government would either want to fix it or get rid of it, because it's just atypical that the government has something this badly broken that affects people so much, right down to the patient level, waiting in the fitting room with nobody to fit their devices. That it's just highly unusual and highly inappropriate, you'd think, for a government to respond this way to the providers and the patients.
And I'll chime in. This is Tom Feiss. Just to kind of buttress the comments that Charles Dankmeyer made about the OMP providers being an attractive spot for a RAC auditor who is paid on a commission basis. One number that we haven't underscored, but orthotics and prosthetics constitutes about 1/3 of 1% of Medicare spend. So a very, very small part of Medicare spend. And probably, to me, the most striking thing other than the interest dollars and all of that in the report was the conclusion where, Al, you all stated that while OMP services represent 10.5% of RAC Part B claims, so we're up from 1/3 of 1% of Medicare to 10.5% of Part B claims, these represented more than half of all Medicare payments for RAC audits at the ALJ level. So it's certainly a disproportionate explosion in the numbers as you move up the line.
Okay, great. Does anyone else want to make any final closing remarks here?
This is Charles Dankmeyer. I think one of the other things that's important to understand is that simply because a RAC auditor has decided that a claim has an error in it, it does not mean that there was a problem with the prosthesis or orthosis that the individual has received. Those patients have received their devices and they have been continued to be serviced by the orthotist and prosthetist who provided them. Typically, the reason that a claim is denied is for some technical reason. It could be that the date that a patient signed for delivery of the device is different from the date that was at the top of the form. It could be a simple number change. It could be an addition problem. It is typically a very technical problem that has nothing to do with fraud.
Okay, great. And thank you all for those closing remarks. We do want to make sure that all members of the media on call and listening to this over recording later know where to get more information. You can contact Will Harwood at 703-276-3255 to be connected with any of the speakers that you've heard from today. And as I said before, the report, the full study, and the related news release are available on the web at www.aopanet.org. Again, that's www.aopanet.org. That is also where the streaming audio replay of this news conference will be available tonight as of 5 p.m. Again, you've been listening to a news conference sponsored by the American Orthotic and Prosthetic Association. Thank you so much for joining us. That concludes today's news conference.